Hello and welcome to Volume 44, Number 31 of your weekly local news magazine, Grapevine. Brought to you by the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association, this edition is published on Friday the 2nd of August 2024. Hi, I'm Graham, your presenter, joined this week by newsreader Desney. And in this week's issue, a question mark hangs over the James Paget rebuild, the local power station is being stepped up a gear, beware cold callers, shouldn't you always, and Norfolk food producers are nationally recognised. In addition, we have a mountain climber amongst us, and Norwich witches get tough treatment. Well, all this coming your way during the next hour or so, and with no birthdays this week, it's straight over to Desney for some news.
Hello everybody, this is Desney, your reader for the week. We're having some lovely weather just at the moment. It's getting really, really hot, and some of us are finding it too hot, but we're never satisfied, are we? I always think the extremes of weather are fine, as long as you're able to do exactly what you want to do and your life is not full of things that you must do at a particular time. Anyway, let's get on with some news. A Norfolk-based firm has collapsed into administration, leading to hundreds of job losses. Specialised Management Services, SMS Alderley, in Galston, went into administration last week and staff were told they had lost their jobs. Formed in 1999, the firm manufactured equipment and provided maintenance and installation services for the oil and gas industry, specialising in hydraulic, pneumatic and electrical control systems. SMS, headquartered at Starling House off Lancelot Road, also has bases in Aberdeen and Bristol. SMS was acquired by its parent company, Alderley PLC, a multidisciplined engineering firm, in 2003. Both Alderley PLC and Alderley Systems have also entered administration. Alderley was founded in 1989 and has bases in the UK, India, Saudi Arabia, Singapore, United Arab Emirates and Qatar. Joint administrators were called in on Wednesday, July the 24th. A statement on the SMS and Alderley website reads, "The affairs, business and property of Alderley PLC, APLC, Alderley Systems Limited, ASL and Specialised Management Services Limited, SMS, are being managed by Alistair Wardell, Richard Lewis and Rob Parker, appointed as joint administrators. The Joint Administrators act as agents of APLC, ASL and SMS and without personal liability. Alistair Wardell, Richard Lewis and Rob Parker are authorised by the IPA to act as insolvency practitioners. Originally, SMS predominantly operated as a service and support company for the oil and gas industry. But within its first 2 years, the company moved to larger premises, doubling its number of employees. This was facilitated by the acquisition of C&M Hydraulics, an already well-established supply company to the oil and gas sector and local industries. The exact number of job losses is unknown, but it is believed to be in the hundreds. Staff were advised to apply for government redundancy payments. Both SMS and Alderley were contacted for comment. Rail travellers faced major disruption to services on Monday after a Norwich-bound train struck an animal on the tracks. Greater Anglia announced that all lines were blocked due to the obstruction on the line between Great Yarmouth and Acle. The incident took place on the 5:43 a.m. Great Yarmouth to Norwich train near Acle. a witness had reported that a horse was struck by the train. Train services between Great Yarmouth and Norwich were diverted via Reedham, and Greater Anglia warned that some services may also be cancelled or delayed. A rail replacement bus service was scheduled to run between Great Yarmouth and Norwich for passengers requiring Acle and Lingwood. Greater Anglia and Network Rail staff were on site to deal with the issue. A spokesman from Greater Anglia said, "We apologise for any inconvenience caused. Anyone who was delayed can claim delay repay." At around 2:30 p.m, Greater Anglia announced that all lines had reopened. A spokesman said, "Train services running to and from these stations are returning to normal, but some services may still be cancelled, delayed or revised." The trial date of a man accused of murder following an attack in the town has been moved again. Martin Montgomery, 31, has denied murder following an attack on Nigel Matz, a man in his 50s who was found with serious injuries in Regent Road, Great Yarmouth. It followed an assault believed to have taken place inside a communal area in a block of flats at Malakoff Close shortly before 12:10 p.m. on December the 22nd last year. Mr. Matz was taken to hospital but died as a result of his injuries on January the 4th this year. Montgomery of Russell Road, Yarmouth, who has admitted manslaughter, was originally due to go on trial on July the 1st, having pleaded not guilty to murder. But last month, the trial date was changed to September the 2nd, after it emerged the defence was still awaiting a report from a pathologist and were not ready for the July trial date. On Tuesday, July the 30th, the case was back at Norwich Crown Court, when Judge Alice Robinson refixed the trial, expected to last 2 weeks, to November the 11th, due to issues with witness availability. Will Carter appeared for the prosecution, while John Morgans represented Montgomery, who did not appear in court for the short hearing. Montgomery had initially been charged with inflicting grievous bodily harm with intent following the attack, but was later charged with murder after Mr. Matz died. Doubt has been cast over the rebuilds of two crumbling Norfolk hospitals following the announcement of a review of the projects. Chancellor Rachel Reeves has announced that the new Labour government is reviewing the new hospitals programme ahead of the autumn budget. It is part of a move to address a £22 billion financial black hole, she says, has been inherited from the Conservative government, announced to the House of Commons on Monday. The review has cast fresh doubt over previously pledged plans to replace both the Queen Elizabeth Hospital in King's Lynn and the James Paget University Hospital in Galston. Both hospitals are built from reinforced autoclaved aerated concrete and are fast approaching the end of their shelf lives, with the QEH currently held up by thousands of props. Ahead of this month's general election, Labour promised to commit to both rebuild projects in the event of a victory. But, during her spending inheritance address on Monday, she announced the new hospital programme was being put under immediate review. James Wilde, Tory MP for North West Norfolk, said, "This new review will only cause further managing delay and uncertainty for NHS staff and patients. Ministers simply need to act on the clear advice from an independent expert report on the compelling case for a new hospital to address the RAAC issue. I will continue to press this Labour government to stick to the promises they made to our local community." Terry Jeremy, new Labour MP for South West Norfolk, said, "A new QEH was an absolute priority," blaming the previous government for the delays. He said, "It is right and proper that the new government takes stock of where things are at with the hospital projects within the new hospitals programme. We should remember, however, this rebuild is long overdue, and the previous government should have been addressing the issues years ago and making necessary preparation rather than kicking the can down the road. I'm committed to the new build as soon as possible and will be applying whatever pressure I can." An e-scooter rider is fighting for his life after a crash in Great Yarmouth. The collision involving a private e-scooter and a grey Ford Focus happened at 1:45 p.m. on Saturday at the junction of St Peter's Road and King Street. The rider of the scooter, a man in his 50s, was taken to the James Paget Hospital, where he remains in a critical but stable condition. Officers would like to speak to anyone who may have witnessed the collision. An energy company is seeking permission to generate more electricity at Great Yarmouth Power Plant. Great Yarmouth Power Station currently has a maximum of capacity of about 400 megawatts, enough to meet the needs of more than 300,000 households. But now its owner, RWE, is applying for that capacity to be changed to up to 430 megawatts. A spokesman for the company said the application follows incremental, modest improvements at the gas-powered plant, which mean it can produce slightly more electricity than is currently set out in its consent. Generating the additional electricity will not require any additional work to the station. At present, the site has approval to operate under a Section 36 consent, S36, which specifies the maximum generation capacity. The application is to update the planning consent to allow the full capability to be utilised. A spokesman for Great Yarmouth Borough Council said that Town Hall was consulted by RWE as part of a variation of consent application to the Department for Energy, Security and Net Zero, DESNZ. The application was to authorise the output of the power station of up to 430 megawatts. Having considered the proposal, the council has raised no objection, the spokesman said. Earlier this year, RWE unveiled plans to install a carbon capture plant at Great Yarmouth Power Station to prevent CO2 being emitted into the atmosphere. The gas-fired facility, located by the town's South Deans, opened in its current form in 2001. The town's first power plant opened in 1894 and used steam engines and turbines to power industrial buildings and light public areas. It was torn down in 1961, with a new oil-fired plant opening on South Deans Road. That operated until 1984 and was eventually demolished along with its iconic 360-foot chimney in 1997. A man in his 40s has been left with severe injuries after he was assaulted by a group of men. The attack happened in the St George's Road and Kent Square areas of Great Yarmouth on July the 21st at 9 p.m. The victim was approached by several men who punched and kicked him, leaving him with severe facial injuries. Three men were arrested at the scene on suspicion of assault and taken to Great Yarmouth Police Station for questioning. They were later released on police bail pending further investigation. Norfolk Constabulary would like to speak to anyone who may have witnessed the incident or the events leading up to it.
Well, Desney will return in a nonce, but first, a story we gleaned from the ADP, and this concerns our local Vision Norfolk Hub coordinator, Edward. And the story from the ADP goes thus. A blind worker, alongside four colleagues, is set to climb the UK's third highest mountain. The team, working for Norfolk's sight loss charity Vision Norfolk, aim to raise £5,000 in September by tackling the 3,500-foot Mount Snowdon. This follows Ed Bates' disappointment of being unable to realise his ambition of climbing to Mount Everest Base Camp due to medical reasons. Mr. Bates, the charity's hub coordinator in Great Yarmouth, who was born blind, will participate with community outreach worker Matthew Hodder, Chief Executive Andrew Mortar, Services Manager and Deputy Chief Executive Barbara Dunn, and Leisure and Activities Coordinator Helen King. The group will take on the six-hour trek to help people living with sight loss live independent and fulfilled lives. Matthew Hodder praised Mr. Bates as an inspirational person and said, "When he heard that he could not be able to make the trip to Everest Base Camp, I half jokingly suggested we should create our own Everest by climbing Snowdon, and the idea snowballed from there." The team can be sponsored by justgiving.com. And best of luck to all.
Climb every mountain, search high and low, follow follow every rainbow.
climbing Snowdon, a very Welsh mountain, so the very Welsh Shirley Bassey seemed appropriate to celebrate that endeavour. Time for more news from Desney, and as we don't have Desney's usual look at the week's telly due to a technical problem, following very closely on will be Andy explaining which is which.
Great Yarmouth Borough Council is still hopeful about getting a £20 million cash boost despite the government's announcement of a review into public spending. Chancellor Rachel Reeves told the House of Commons on Monday, July the 29th, there was a £20 billion financial black hole inherited from the previous government. The resulting public spending cuts have cast uncertainty over a series of infrastructure projects in the county, from the rebuilding of the James Paget Hospital in Galston to the proposed Norwich Western Link Road. But one scheme not mentioned as part of the review was the long-term plan for towns programme, from which Great Yarmouth Borough Council is hoping to get £20 million. Sheila Oxterby, Chief Executive of Great Yarmouth Borough Council, GYBC, said, "We're still quite hopeful that the money that was allocated is still in place." The council was originally working towards a deadline of August the 1st for submitting its application for the money. Bosses were told last week the government no longer requires applications to be submitted by that date. But Ms Oxterby said, "At the moment, we're still carrying on with working up proposals." The council hopes to use the £20 million to tackle so-called zombie shops in the town centre, a lack of dental services and cleaning the streets. Town Hall has also proposed using funding to improve CCTV coverage and to work alongside Norwich Police to develop more projects to help drive down antisocial behaviour. These issues will be the focus of the initial three-year investment plan and 10-year vision to be submitted to the government. This followed Great Yarmouth being named as one of the 55 towns across the country to receive a slice of £1.5 billion government funding to be used for long-term investments to benefit the community. The long-term plan for towns programme was launched in September last year by the previous Conservative government. A man is in hospital in a critical condition after a burglary in Great Yarmouth. Norfolk police said they were called to reports of a theft at a business at Enterprise Court at 5:54 a.m. on Friday, July the 26th. The business is believed to be DIY tool hire. Officers attending the scene found a man inside the building with serious injuries consistent with a fall from height. The man in his 40s was taken to Addenbrookes Hospital, where he remains in a critical but stable condition. The circumstances of his injuries are not being treated as suspicious. Officers are investigating the burglary and inquiries continue. DIY tool hire declined to comment on the incident. Lawyers were paid almost £900,000 by Norfolk County Council to defend decisions over school places for children, only for judges to back parents in the majority of cases. Parents appealed more than 350 decisions by County Hall over school placements for youngsters with special educational needs and disabilities, SEND, in 2023. Of the 291 so far dealt with, the majority were concluded without requiring a tribunal hearing, with the Conservative-controlled authority agreeing to meet the parents' requests in 244 cases. Of the 47 which went before judges, 30 found in favour of the children. 8 were partially dismissed or allowed, 6 were dismissed, and 3 were struck out. Critics blasted a system which leaves parents and children stressed, yet leads to ever-increasing payments to lawyers. The 2023-24 figure of £890,000 in legal fees compares to £500,000 in 2022, while the number of appeals has soared to 359 compared to just 46 in 2015-16. Disagreements which trigger appeals are often over whether the child goes to a mainstream school or a specialist one. Norfolk County Council has been spending £120 million on new special schools, including in Great Yarmouth, Fakenham and Easton, with plans for more. But council bosses say existing special schools face significant pressure, while it anticipates an even higher number of appeals in 2024. That could mean legal fees top £1 million at a time when the council faces having to make another £45 million of cuts and savings. Maxine Webb, independent county councillor for Norwich's Wensum division, said there needs to be changes to stop money being squandered. She said, "We need to look at how this whole system works. Admissions to schools for children with special educational needs has become admission by tribunal, and that cannot be right. I do have sympathy with the council, but there have been recommendations made to local authorities, and I haven't seen evidence of Norfolk implementing any of them." Nothing will change while the council chooses to carry on lawyering up and battling stressed, despairing parents, rather than working with them to help put in place the support their children need. It's cruel, nonsensical, and inept. The council says it has doubled the number of funded special school places since 2014, up from 1,169 to 2,423, and has created new specialist resource base. The county council signed a safety valve agreement with the government in March last year, getting £70 million for education services and support for SEND children up until 2029. The bailout was to cover the deficit the council accrued amid a rising number of children needing specialist provision or extra support. But just a few months after the agreement was signed, the council told the Department for Education its scheme was off track and was likely to have an £11.8 million deficit in 2028-29. Last month, the council told schools it was changing funding for children with special educational needs, which means some schools will get less than anticipated. Angry school chiefs wrote to the council, warning that could lead to significant redundancies and a spike in exclusions of children. A hair and beauty professional who's worked for celebrity clients has opened a new salon in Galston. Amber Hammond, 28, has opened Salon 83 in High Street and said she is super proud of the launch and the tranquil atmosphere she has created. Salon 83 offers a range of hair services, and clients can also book nail treatments, massages, aesthetics and semi-permanent makeup applications. Miss Hammond has been working towards this moment since she got her first job as a Salon Saturday girl at the age of 13. She completed an apprenticeship when she left school and earned an additional qualification in makeup in London. I went to London to do a makeup course with a wonderful lady called Sarah, who then asked me to be the hair and makeup manager for London Fashion Week. For 2 years running, Miss Hammond said. I did hair for a few celebrities with her too. The fashion designers at Fashion Week and a couple of The Only Way is Essex girls. It felt like I'd made it. But I later realised I loved having my own clientele and decided that was the route I wanted to go down. When she felt more established at the age of 20, she became self-employed, and at 28 she finally felt content enough in her position to open a salon. Miss Hammond said she's tried to make the salon a friendly, calm, tranquil place, and that customers have been complimentary of the atmosphere. It's exactly what I wanted, so I feel super proud that I've managed to create this for everyone, including myself. A Norfolk man is suing the government. A Norfolk man who has lost his home to coastal erosion has appeared at the High Court, where he is challenging the government over its deficient climate plans. Kevin Jordan lived in Hemsby until last December, when his chalet was one of five demolished by Great Yarmouth Borough Council contractors after coastal erosion left them on the verge of falling into the sea. He is bringing his case alongside disability activist Doug Pawley and environmental campaign group Friends of the Earth, who say that the government's National Adaptation Plan fails to properly respond to 61 climate change risks. These include the health risks posed by high temperatures, the threat to communities and buildings from coastal flooding, erosion and extreme weather events, and the potential issues for forestry and farming due to changing climate conditions, the court was told. The Department for Environment, Food and Rural Affairs, DEFRA, opposed the legal challenge at the two-day hearing in London last week. David Wolfe, KC, representing campaigners, said how the defendant responds to these climate risks has far-reaching consequences for society, including the safety of at-risk individuals from harm. Unfortunately, climate change is predicted to worsen for the foreseeable future. The barrister said the NAP, which is required every 5 years under the 2008 Climate Change Act, perpetuated ministers' history of failure in climate adaptation and should be quashed and rewritten. Before the hearing, Mr. Jordan said the government's adaptation plans are completely inadequate for dealing with the threat that climate change poses to people and the economy. Mark Westmoreland Smith, KC for DEFRA, said in written arguments that the campaigner's case was based on fundamental factual errors and was an unfair characterisation of the approach taken by ministers. He said campaigners were making semantic arguments and that ministers had not misunderstood the law. The hearing before Mr. Justice Chamberlain ended on Wednesday, July the 24th, with a ruling expected at a later date. A man accused of murdering a 23-year-old saw his cousin killed after he was knifed multiple times in an attack which happened while he was growing up in Mozambique, a court heard. Junior Suleiman, 22, is accused of the murder of Felizardo José Vieira Balde following a chance encounter in St. Peter's Road in Great Yarmouth in February 2023. Norwich Crown Court was told he had pulled out a large knife to inflict fatal injuries with a single stab wound to the chest as revenge for an attack he had suffered a month earlier. giving evidence, Suleiman told defence barrister Simon Spence, KC, he was born in Mozambique and lived there until he was 14, but left after he saw his cousin killed when he was stabbed multiple times. While living in Mozambique, Suleiman had seen people dead after missiles started going all over the place at a military base, and there were people blowing up everywhere. The court heard Suleiman went to live with his mother in Yarmouth, but, as a youngster, was robbed multiple times and was the subject of bullying. Suleiman also told jurors he'd been a passenger in a car in Manchester which crashed, resulting in the death of another passenger in the vehicle in 2021. Mr. Spence asked Junior whether, as a result of what he had witnessed, he suffered from any mental health problems. He said he had not previously thought so, but now, having seen a psychologist, started to realise I have. When asked what effect these events had upon him as a young man, Suleiman said he was mostly troubled. Suleiman continued giving evidence in his defence on Wednesday. Earlier on Tuesday, the court heard how Suleiman gave no comment when he was first interviewed by police on February the 11th last year. But when he was interviewed for a second time, he provided the following prepared statement. It said, "I had no intention to kill Felizardo José Vieira Balde on February the 8th, 2023. Having been stabbed by him previously, our paths crossed on that day. I accept I went towards him with a knife in my hand. He pushed me, but I accept I made a stabbing motion towards him. I didn't know it caused him serious injury. Suleiman, formerly of Market Place, Yarmouth, has gone on trial, having denied murder. The trial continues."
Hello. I have another story in the Weird Norfolk series. And this one is going back to times of ducking stools and medieval witchcraft. It concerns, as its title says, Fye Bridge, where scolds, strumpets and witches were punished. Thousands of us pass over it every day without a passing thought for the role it played in Norwich's dark past. The oldest known bridge site in the city, older than Bishop's Bridge, albeit rebuilt in 1829, so far more modern in appearance, is a tombstone's throw from nearby Tombland and leads to Magdalen Street. There are records of this ancient bridge from 1153, when it would have been a timber structure, before it was replaced with stone in the early 15th century. During the reign of Henry V, the bridge fell into disrepair and was destroyed by flooding in 1570. The current bridge was opened in 1933 and has two arches and a width of 50 feet between the parapets. Below it flows the River Wensum, a stretch of water once used to determine whether or not an accused person was practicing witchcraft. Matthew Hopkins, who claimed to hold the office of Witchfinder General, and his colleague John Stern, carried out terrible witch hunts in East Anglia between 1644 and 1647, and during this time was responsible for more people being hanged for witchcraft than in the previous 100 years. Fye Bridge is thought to be where the city's medieval ducking stool was situated. A chair which was formerly used for the punishment of disorderly women, scolds, strumpets and dishonest tradesmen in England and Scotland. But during Hopkins' reign of terror, it took on an even more sinister purpose. It was the method used to test women who were being suspected of witches. One theory being that if the unfortunate woman survived the ducking, then she had to be a witch, who would be summarily be burnt. And if she drowned, she was innocent of all charges, albeit innocent and dead. Generally, a simple chair to which the accused could be tied, the similarly named cucking stools, were put on wheels so the women could be dragged around the parish and humiliated, while ducking stools were on poles to make immersing the women in the water an easier process. Some argued that witches floated because they had renounced baptism when entering Satan's service. James VI of Scotland, later James I of England, claimed in his Demonology that water was so pure an element that it repelled the guilty. If we travel back to Bishopbridge, still one of the oldest active bridges in England, there's a connection to the poor souls who were ducked as witches. Built in 1340, the bridge once boasted a gatehouse and was crossed by Robert Kett and his rebels in 1549 and by Elizabeth I in 1578. On the far side of the bridge was Lollard's Pit, where chalk was drawn to provide the foundations for Norwich Cathedral and which was owned by the Bishop of Norwich. Just outside the city walls, it was the perfect place for those who'd been cast out by the church to meet their end. Lollards, anti-clerical and so-called heretics, were burned at the site from the 1420s up until the reign of Mary in the 16th century. It also became the venue for witch burnings during the mid-17th century. More accused witches were hanged than burnt, but a handful met their fiery death at this site within view of Bishopsbridge. The accused were marched from their cell at the city's Guildhall and then towards the pit across the bridge and past the faggots of wool piled high on their pyre before they were handed over by the church to their executioner. It is said that the ghost of a woman who was burned after being accused of witchcraft can still be seen wandering up and down Bishopsgate, holding the faggot of wood which would be lit beneath her. Dressed in rags, she can be seen stumbling along the street, and drinkers at Lollard's Pit pub on the site of the execution ground have reported hearing screams. On occasion, the woman has been seen to drop the firewood she is carrying and pleading for help to pick it up. But do not fall into her trap. It is said that if ever you spy the witch and help her with her bundle of sticks, then you too will die in a fire within 6 months.
Just took me by surprise.
OK, news part the third now, and back to Desney.
A whole host of Norfolk products have been recognised in the world's largest food and drink accreditation scheme. The Guild of Fine Foods Great Taste Awards, now in its 31st year, are back for 2024 with entries from almost 3,500 companies across 115 countries. Blind tasted by expert judges, 3 stars are given to extraordinarily tasty food and drink, 2 stars to products that are above and beyond delicious, and 1 star for food and drink that delivers fantastic flavour. The East of England has won a total of 284 awards, including 231 1-star, 66 2-star and 5 3-star products. In Norfolk, Woodrow Chocolate's Passion Fruit and Mango Caramel scooped the top accolade. The business is based in Diss and run by couple Jesse Forbes and Simon Woodrow. 2-star Norfolk winners include Sunfire Spirits, Spiced Dark Rum and Raspberry Jam from The Tea Lady, based in Dereham and Attleborough, respectively. John Farrand, Managing Director of the Guild of Fine Foods, said, "Given the economic headwinds that both independent retailers and small and medium producers are facing, the announcement of the 2024 crop of Great Taste Stars is a boost for us all." Armed police. Firearms officers responded to hundreds of incidents in Norfolk last year, new figures show. While police officers do not routinely carry guns in the UK, forces may use specially trained firearms officers in response to some crimes. Figures from the Home Office show Norfolk Constabulary deployed these officers in 250 operations in the year to March, down from 273 the year before. Officers have been called to 1,239 incidents in the past 5 years. Dr. Peter Squires of the Gun Control Network, established after the Dunblane tragedy, said the decrease in the number of deployments reflects a welcome fall in the frequency of incidents requiring police-armed attendance. The figures show there were 159 police officers trained to use firearms in Norfolk, a rise on the 147 a year earlier. In Suffolk, firearms officers were deployed to 175 incidents last year, down from 216 in the previous 12 months. Nationally, police firearms were intentionally discharged at a person just twice in 23-24, compared to 10 times a year earlier, and not at all in Norfolk or Suffolk. Most 8-year-old boys spend their days learning about maths and science at school and playing football, Pokemon and video games. But for Archie Kelly, who lives with his family in Galston, it also involves regular visits to Great Ormond Street Children's Hospital in London. A year and a half ago, Archie was diagnosed with a rare autoimmune disease which affects 1 in 250,000 people, called Parry-Romberg syndrome. The condition means that the tissues underneath the skin on one side of the face gradually shrink and degenerate. Since the diagnosis, he's been taking steroid tablets every day, methotrexate injections once a week, and fortnightly blood tests. There is no cure, and no way to reverse any damage that has been done on the right side of Archie's face. His brother, Kyle Kelly, 18, said, "He has had a rough year with all the tests and treatments for a little boy his age. It's hard to try and explain to him what is happening when we don't really understand it ourselves. He's been so brave through all this so far, but there's still a very long road ahead for him. Archie goes to Peterhouse Primary School in Galston, but has had to miss days to attend hospital appointments. He hasn't been able to stay in school. He's constantly in and out of hospital for days on end. For a young person, it's quite traumatising, the stuff he has to go through," Kyle said. Kyle is now planning to cycle 850 miles to raise awareness about the disease and money for the charity Scleroderma and Raynaud's UK. "As his big brother, I thought the only thing I could do was to raise people's awareness," he said. "Starting on September the 2nd, he will cycle from London to Paris, then to the Netherlands, before taking a ferry to Essex and returning on his bike to Galston. To donate, you can visit Kyle's GoFundMe page at www.gofundme.com/f/cycling-4-awareness. A man has lost his battle to bulldoze an ugly garage and build a house for his son. Brian Lakey was seeking permission to demolish an outbuilding and erect a detached, self-built house in a garden plot at Tarn House on Yarmouth Road in Ormsby St Margaret. Last year, planners at Great Yarmouth Borough Council rejected the plans. They said the location was in a strategic gap between Caister and Ormsby, where the principle of development was not considered acceptable. In March, Mr. Leakey took his fight to the Planning Inspectorate, a government agency which can overturn decisions where it thinks councils have gone against planning law. That appeal has been dismissed. The inspector, Gordon Raitt, who visited the site in May, said that residents of the proposed house would likely depend on a private car to access shops and services. He also said the house would appear dominant and incongruous in its surroundings and in relation to adjacent existing dwellings. The proposed site was near the closed First and Last pub. Supporting documents had said the plan was to demolish a rather ugly garage block and develop a modern, three-bedroomed property for the applicant's son. And plans for a second house to be dismissed. Plans for a cul-de-sac house. A man's hopes for additional living space has been dashed after an appeal to build an extension was rejected. Alex Denny wanted to extend his property on Green Lane in Caister to create an extra room and a garage. Great Yarmouth Borough Council rejected the application over concerns the extension would be excessive compared to the original house. Mr. Denny then appealed that refusal to the Planning Inspectorate, but the decision was upheld. The inspector said most of the buildings along the road were bungalows, whereas the appeal property was a two-storey house with a detached garage. They said the extension would result in a loss of the openness at the end of the cul-de-sac viewed from the High Street end and approaching down the lane. Due to its overall size, they said, the extension would be a harmful addition to the area. The inspector acknowledged that Mr. Denny was frustrated with the process involved in pursuing this proposal, before dismissing the appeal. Caister Parish Council had not objected to the plans. Police are continuing to investigate reports of a rape outside the derelict Star Hotel. The incident is alleged to have happened at the back of the hotel on Howard Street South on June the 13th. Police cordoned off the back of the hotel while forensic service workers in white suits carried out their investigations. Inquiries led officers to the site following a report of a rape in the town at around 8 p.m. the previous night. Nobody has been arrested in connection with the incident, and a Norfolk police spokesperson said that inquiries are ongoing. Last month, work to secure and repair parts of the Star Hotel were carried out following repeated incidents of criminal activity on the site, including arson attacks, antisocial behaviour, and reports it was taken over as a hideout for County Lines gangs.
Well, that's it for this week's edition, which is copyright 2024 of the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association. News content is adapted mainly from the Great Yarmouth Mercury. However, the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association accepts responsibility for editorial decisions made for this recording. Don't forget, you can contact us from our website at grapevinegy.org if you have any queries over our service. Your newsreader next week will be Andy, so we hope for your company then for much more of your local news. In the meantime, from all of us here at Grapevine, stay safe and well, enjoy the summer weather in all its iterations, and bye for now.